So have you ever had to turn a negative into a positive? Turn that frown upside down. Ever had to do that? You know, kind of like, you know, it's the beginning of the new year. Maybe you've got a, you know, New Year's resolution to lose some weight, you know? But you did something really nice for somebody a few weeks ago, and they decided as a thank you gift to send a little DoorDash to your house. And that DoorDash is a nice little box that says Duck Donuts on the top. Yeah. And inside of that little gift box is a maple bacon donut and a peanut butter paradise donut. Yeah. And those two donuts, they look like two negatives sitting in front of you right there, right? Like, how in the world are you going to make this a positive? I mean, after all, you're trying to count your calories. But then as you hold that box, you remember something that Mike Seaver said on the back row in math class in high school. You're like, well, I think I remember something. And when you remember it, you just decide, oh, man, I'm eating these donuts. And you do. You eat those donuts. You mow through them. Because what you remember Mike Seaver saying was that two negatives make a positive, right? So you just took them two negative donuts and boy, you turned them into a positive. It was for real. Sometimes the negatives are not food. Sometimes the negatives are words, right? Someone says something to you that is just harsh or negative sounding. And as you hear that negative thing, as you're listening to it, you can't even think about turning it into a positive. You ever had something like that happen to you? Have you had something like that happen this week? Well, we continue our series, Do the Next Thing, where we're looking at a very simple concept for how to keep moving in life, even when some of the negative things pop up. Negative things could be doubt or fear or worry. It could be stress, anxiety, anger, discouragement, depression. But there is a way to keep moving even as those things approach. We're going to ask the Apostle Paul to help us today and look at a letter that he wrote to some folks in a place called Galatia, which today is just north of Syria, and it's known as the Republic of Turkey. Our message is going to be Choose to Rely, and we begin with Galatians chapter 3, verse 1. Paul writes, "You foolish Galatians." Well, there you go, right? I mean, that's how we want to be greeted, right? When we walk into the breakfast joint, we like when the guys raise their hand, "Hey, you senseless fool, good to see you. Glad you're here," right? I mean, that's not what we really want to hear. And J.B. Phillips, one commentator, said this, "Oh, you dear idiots of Galatia, surely you can't be so idiotic." But that's the feel. It's double negative. But why? Why would Paul open with this harsh language? Why would he open with such negative words? Why didn't he just say something, "Hey guys, I got something really important I need to talk to you about, so listen up"? Well, the reason he uses this strong negative sounding language is because the Galatians were ignoring and disregarding the grace of God. They were taking the grace of God and sticking it in like one of those red plastic containers that we put all our ornaments in and stick it out in the shed until next Christmas. They were just shoving the grace of God off to the side. And why is that such a big deal? Why is it such a big deal to shove the grace of God off to the side? Well, let's consider it from this angle. Have you ever heard of the law of the threes? The law of the threes. It's different because all of our bodies are different, but generally speaking, the laws of the three go like this. You can survive 3 weeks without food. You can survive 3 days without water. And you can survive 3 minutes without air. But behind the threes is the question of, well, where do the threes come from? I mean, the threes have to come from somewhere, right? The water, the food, the air, it's got to come from somewhere. So where does it come from? Well, some people believe that the food and the water, the air, the big threes, they come from some big explosion in space, you know, many thousands of years ago. Other people may believe that the big threes come from a natural byproduct of just the evolution of matter. Some people believe the big threes, they come from human hard work that we're just producing. And some believe that it might come from the chemical reactions of modern science. Some people might believe that food and water and air, you know, come from Luke Skywalker, you know, finding a secret cave somewhere on the moon of Endor, you know. But whatever you believe, there is one universal reality, one logical, rational, universal reality, and that is that something cannot come from nothing. Something has to come from something. There has to be a beginning. Food and water and air can't just happen. They have to have a beginning. And what we would like to graciously and boldly proclaim is that every single person in this room, every single person listening and watching online, every single person in the universe, past, present, and future, has been created with a seed planted in the deepest part of our heart and mind and soul, our very being, that knows that there is a moral and practical, a reasonable, logical, existential reality, however you want to describe it, that food and water and air have their beginnings in and with the grace of God. That there is something about the existence of all things that did not just happen, but they are a reflection of the grace and the hand and the power of God. So to disregard the grace of God is not just some vague religious no-no. To disregard the grace of God is, in essence, denying the very basic realities of your existence. Or put another way, you can't survive 3 seconds without the grace of God. Now, Paul is not primarily talking about our existence. He's not talking about disregarding that we exist because of the grace of God, although that's a great starting point in our minds. Paul, more specifically, is talking about disregarding the very reality of what's happening with your being right now, what's happening with your soul right now, not just right now, but what will happen with your being and your soul in the moment that you breathe your last breath. So that's why he's using harsh, strong, negative language. This is a matter of life or death. Listen to what he writes next. You foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? Before whose eyes Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. The Galatians had heard the truth about Jesus. They'd heard the gospel, like a huge neon sign in their front yard. There was no confusion. They had seen and heard the historical truth about Jesus and the spiritual truth about Jesus, the Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of God, the Messiah, the Christ. And Paul's opening was strong, negative-sounding language because those same Galatians, even though they had publicly embraced and seen and heard the gospel, the truth about Jesus, now they were abandoning the truth about the crucified Christ. They were abandoning the truth about the cross. And what's the truth about the cross? The truth about the cross is there is absolutely no way for anyone to be right with God outside of what Jesus accomplished on the cross. The hope of eternity, the joy that we need the most today, is all wrapped up in what Jesus accomplished on the cross. And the Galatians were ignoring that. They were beginning to define their faith by their own moral values. They were beginning to define their faith by their own religious values. They were beginning to define their faith by their own religious and moral deeds instead of what Christ did. Their deeds instead of what Christ did. And so Paul's saying, hey, that's foolish. Y'all are crazy for even trying something like that. And his description here is so interesting. He says it's almost like a spell had been cast on him. Who's bewitched you? Who has cast this spell on you? You know, we can sit here today and listen to these words from what many just called some ancient old book, but the reality is that spell can still be cast on us today. We can still have a spell cast on our minds and hearts where we start to just kind of ignore the power of the cross, where we begin to let the majesty of the cross fade out of our hearts and our minds, where we speak more of what we do for God than what God has done for us. And who cast that spell on us? Well, there's kind of two main spellcasters, if you will. And the first spellcaster is us. We do it. You know, there's that old phrase, oh, well, the devil made me do it. That's just a lie, okay? Just so you know. This is what Jesus said, Matthew 15. The things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and those things defile the person. So Jesus is saying the devil didn't make you do it. You did it all on your own, you know? Whatever your sinful rebellion is, it is a reflection of your heart. It's not a reflection of your spouse. It's not a reflection of your kids. It's not a reflection of the government. It's not a reflection of your boss. It's not a reflection of anything external. It is a reflection of our hearts. Sinful rebellion begins in the heart. But even though we have sinful rebellion in our heart that can cast a spell of doubt and confusion and foolishness, that should not stir us to ignore the rebellion of the fallen angel, the creature, the being, the enemy of the world, the enemy of God's people, known as Satan, devil. And one of Satan's most effective tools is using false teachers to take the truth of the gospel and tweak it just a little bit, just enough, and to convince people that this is what you need to be talking about. This is what you need to be saying and singing and preaching and thinking about and telling other people about, when that version of the gospel is not really the gospel at all. Yesterday morning, I was sitting in the coffee shop working on today's message, and I had my earbuds in, so I was kind of zoned out. I always have like one song that I just listen to on repeat, I mean, for hours. I just zone out. For some reason, yesterday it was Renegade by Styx. I don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes my mind just is in another world. But so I've got my earbuds in, and I'm zoned in. I don't know that anybody else is in the room. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there's these glossy color pamphlets, like kind of like in my face. And so I kind of look up, and there's this guy. And he's handing me these little pamphlets, and I didn't take my earbuds out. I just kind of grabbed them, and he kind of waved and walked off. I was like, all right. And I sat him down. Didn't even look at him. I was like, I don't care. I don't care. I'm in my zone. But anyway, I took a break a little while longer and picked them up, and I started reading through them, and I was like, holy cow. They were little pamphlets from a so-called Christian ministry that I thought had died years ago, because their founder died, and the so-called ministry was full of all kind of just waves of lies and abuse and legal corruption and everything else. But I'm sitting there going, well, I guess these folks are alive and well. And so I sat there and I read through some of the information. You know what? Had a lot of Bible verses in it that talked about Jesus. It talked about salvation. But it was a version of the gospel that is not the gospel at all. So it is so important that we individually read and study the Bible. And then that we don't get off on an island and go, oh, well, I figured it all out. You haven't. You won't. I haven't. I won't. It's why the church exists. We gather to study separately and then study together. And we study God's word and we pray and we seek counsel with like-minded or even non-like-minded Christians, people of discernment and wisdom, people who know how to direct us toward Jesus, so that in our own hearts and minds, we are careful to not listen to the wrong spell, so to speak, and also that we would be able to pick up on, through God's kindness and grace, when the enemy is trying to cast a spell of confusion or doubt or foolishness our way. So how can we break the spell? Well, Paul helps us with one word right here in the text. What was the word? He pointed out Christ as crucified. The spell is broken with the cross. 69 years before our country was even founded, Isaac Watts was writing songs about the majesty and glory of God. And he wrote one particular song about how we can break the spell of foolish thinking. This is the words of that hymn. I've added some amplification to it. When I survey, when I look upon the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain, my most rebellious sin, my most selfish desire, I count but loss. I lose my delight in all of them, and I pour contempt on, I hate all of my pride. All of this when I survey the wondrous cross. How do we break the spell? How do we avoid the foolishness that the Galatians found themselves in? How do we make sure we don't take the grace of God and stick it in the Christmas trunk and pull it back out a year later? We do it by looking at the cross, by looking at the cross, by looking at the cross, by considering the cross, by looking at the beauty and the horror, the torture and the terrific nature of what is accomplished in and through Jesus Christ on the cross. But in our culture, particularly the church culture, there is this sense that maybe the cross is not enough, that we need something beside the cross. We need more activities. We need more programs. We need more videos. We need a greater social media presence. Or maybe we need more dreams and more visions and more signs. As if to say, oh man, if I could just see an image of Jesus in my breakfast taco, oh, I'll believe a little more. Harold, you kill me with the wrong amens. But the reality is this. What we need the most is more of the cross. You see, there is something about the beauty of the cross that can transform any and every moment. The Apostle Paul, he said this to the church at Corinth, "For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified." See, the cross is our message. It's what we have to share. This horrible, terrible, torturous moment in history is the greatest news we have. It is the message. Look to the cross. Why? Because Paul knew that in the power of the cross, any moment we are in can be changed. It can be transformed. Some of you know exactly what I mean. You've been in that moment. You've been in that moment where you've been able to remember what Jesus has done on the cross, and it changes how you're thinking. As I've shared many times before, my Royal Ambassador leader, when I was just a wee lad, Sylvester Thompson, he would weep sitting around those little wooden tables and those wooden chairs reading the Bible to those boys. He would begin weeping if he read anything about the cross. He was overwhelmed with what Jesus did. Paul knew the power of the cross could change any moment, especially a foolish moment with the Galatians. So that's why he's directing them toward the cross. And then he asked them a super important question. Verse 2. "This is the only thing I want to find out from you. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law, or by hearing with faith?" Paul says, I just need one question answered. Answer this question. Did you receive the Spirit of God just because you prayed a sinner's prayer? Just because you shook the preacher's hand? Just because you filled out a card? Just because you were baptized? Or did you receive the Spirit of God, not just from rules or ceremonies? Did you receive the Spirit of God because your heart and mind was quickened by the Spirit of God? You began to see the weight of your sin, and at the exact same time, you begin to see the infinite weight of God's grace. How much greater His grace was than your sin. And then the Spirit of God in that quickening moment captured your heart with that truth. And you responded by faith. And now in this moment, you are looking to Jesus as your greatest joy today and as your greatest hope for when you breathe your last. Which is it? Religious rules, religious laws, or faith by the gracious Spirit of God? Many people try to make salvation just a method, just a process, a list of things you can do. But you cannot make a method out of a miracle. You can't. There is something completely and perfectly miraculous about being saved and rescued and redeemed by God through Jesus Christ. It should mesmerize us, stun us that we've been saved. We need to be stunned and mesmerized more that we've been saved. We all need a little Sylvester Thompson in our hearts. We need to be overwhelmed when we consider what's been done. When we consider that we have received grace, we should be stunned and mesmerized. We should be stunned and mesmerized that our hearts have been captured by the glory and majesty and power and miracle of the cross. The Galatians were not being stunned and mesmerized anymore. They were checking out. And that's exactly why Paul asked them this one particular question. And here's the catch. He already knew they knew the answer. We know what that means, right? One time in high school, I came home after curfew. It was just the one time. It never happened any other time. And I can remember this one particular night, you know, when I got home, my mom was standing there and she was looking at me kind of like the day I was born, just sweet and lovingly. And, you know, and she said, just very simply, she goes, "Do you know what time it is?" Now, here's the thing. Did I know what time it was? Yeah, I knew. I knew what time it was. I knew the answer. And in knowing the answer, I was also displaying my disregard for the truth of that answer. See, Paul knows that they know the answer, but he also knows they are ignoring and disregarding the truth of that answer because they've been listening to false teachers. Now, someone may say, "Oh, a true Christian would never listen to false teachers." You sure about that? Marshall Siegel says this about the Galatians. However wrong the false teachers may have been, their message met a sinful inclination deep inside the human heart. We all secretly love a gospel that relies on us. Oh, we do. We love when something relies on us. Marshall goes on, "We love being the hero, or at least a celebrated sidekick. Self-reliance feeds our self-esteem and our self-worth. Oh, look what I've done. Look what I'm doing. Look what I've done for God. A sidekick." But then he goes on, "But self-reliance never offers us a real meal. And eventually, self-reliance can get us killed spiritually, meaning too much self-reliance shows that we've never had any God reliance, any Christ reliance." He goes on, "The first bite may taste so rich and satisfying, but we only get the one bite. And while we're caught nibbling at the crumbs, the buffet of grace is suddenly out of reach. That's why Paul's using harsh language. It's why he sounds so negative. He's wanting that negative to turn into positive. He's wanting them to see that their foolishness is based on something very real. And he's wanting them to see, look, you are believing in the negative self-reliance that is not true. It's just the one bite. And it doesn't get better than that. And what he's trying to get them to see is, listen, here's the negative, and here's how you turn it. You turn it into the positive. And the positive is there is a buffet of grace. A buffet of grace. And he's saying, look, don't miss the buffet. Don't nibble on your self-reliance, because it will never satisfy you. Never satisfy you. Rather, feast on the grace of God. Feast on your faith in the grace of God. C.S. Lewis said this, "Now faith is the art of holding on to things your reason has once accepted in spite of your changing moods." I mentioned this briefly last week, just in a little bit of listening and reading I've done in the last few weeks. Social media is not evil. It's very helpful for the spread of the gospel. But please understand that every social media outlet, every search engine, they are doing all they can to change your mood, and not in the right way. Every stoplight, every extra 3 seconds you've got to wait at the drive-thru, anything and everything in our life can change our mood, right? But faith in Jesus Christ is not a self-reliance. It's a God-reliance. It's a Christ-reliance, so that when your mood changes, and it will, when your circumstances change, and they will, when things in your family change, and they will, when things in the government change, and it will, when things with your health change, and they will, when those changes come about, to be reliant on God, not to be foolish, to see and remember and know the only reason things are right between me and God is because the Spirit of God captured my heart, not because I was a member of the church, not because I prayed the right thing or baptized the right thing or said the right thing, but because the Spirit of God captured your heart. If you can believe in that, you will begin to remember as you look to the cross that the omnipotence, the omniscience, the omnipresence, the majesty, the mercy, the loyalty, the love, the glory, the goodness, the grandness, and the grace of God will never change. It never changes. Everything else in your life will change. The height of being a foolish person is to think that things will stay the same. They never have. They never will. But God has not changed. His mercy has not changed. His grace has not changed, and it never will. Just try to dial into the reality of that sentence, not as some fancy line that I used in a sermon. In 1707, Isaac Watts sat down with a fancy pen and ink, I guess, and fancy paper. 69 years before this country existed. And he began to write, "When I look at the wondrous cross, everything changes. I begin to see why my existence matters in the light of the glory and majesty and power of the cross." And what Isaac Watts felt that day writing that song is no different than this moment right now. Everything in the universe has changed since 1707. But the grace of God that Isaac Watts had that day is no different than the grace of God that I have right now. His mercy, His grace, they never change, never change. So when the negative things come, and they will come, when the doubt, when the fear, the worry, the anger, the stress, the anxiety, discouragement, depression, when those things come, and they will come, let us not be foolish. Let us not miss the buffet of God's grace, which, by the way, is always prepared. Did you ever have one of those grandmamas? You know, there was always a meal no matter when you stopped by the house. Yeah. The meal is always prepared. The grace is always there for us to enjoy. Sometime more than 958 years ago, some anonymous person wrote a poem about the moments in life that get really overwhelming. The moments in life where the negative things start to feel like the most pressure that we have in life. And they wrote a poem about what it looks like to take the next bite at the buffet of God's grace. And the poem goes like this, one part at least. Do it immediately. Do it with prayer. Do it reliantly, casting all care. Do it with reverence, tracing Christ's hand. He placed it before you with earnest command. Rest on His omnipotence, safe beneath His wing. Leave all resultants. Do the next thing. Don't choose foolish self-reliance. Let us not do that. Let us choose to rely on God, the one who never changes. Let us choose to rely on God and then do the next thing. Whatever the next thing may be, choose to rely on God and do the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. Why? Because the table is always prepared and the grace never ends.